A federal judge has ruled that the New York Police Department's policy of stop and frisk, which allows police to search anyone regardless of whether they think a crime was committed, amounts to indirect racial profiling and violates the constitutional rights of minorities. Mayor Michael Bloomberg has vowed to appeal.
Our crime strategies and tools, including stop, question, frisk, have made New York City the safest big city in America. And I'm happy to say we are on pace for another record low of shootings and homicides this year because our police officers follow the law and follow the crime.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Tuesday, August 13th. We'll talk about the judge's ruling and how this policy may be reformed, and we will welcome your questions and views for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good. Well, before we go into the judge's ruling, how exactly was this stop and frisk being used by the New York police?
Well, it was being used more aggressively than in any other city or most other cities since about 2002, if you suspect that someone might be about to commit a crime, you confront them, talk to them, and you frisk them if you think they might have a weapon on them. We can talk about the law on that in a little bit. In Chicago, it's a little more restrained in terms of how aggressive they are. They're looking for a little more evidence before they stop somebody, a little more evidence before they frisk. So it's really just a question of how far you go. You know, in all these stop and frisk cases, the devil's really in the details, how it's applied.
So they can stop and frisk if they believe a crime may be committed.
Right. It goes back to a 1968 case, which actually at the time was considered kind of a liberal breakthrough because the Supreme Court had ever held that cause had to be shown before you could stop and question somebody and detain them. And there was a case called Terry versus Ohio. And what the court did was sort of draw a compromise. They said that if you have normally to do a search of somebody, you have to have probable cause. Okay, which means that there's a good chance or a fair chance that there might be evidence of a crime or a crime taking place. The court said for a stop, which is a Fourth Amendment issue because you're stopping someone, they're not free to leave. The issue is whether a reasonable person would feel that they were free to leave. But you don't need probable cause for a short stop to simply question. You only need reasonably articulated suspicion or what's called reasonable cause, which is a lower threshold than probable cause. So that's stage one. The first issue is, may you stop someone and question them? What are you up to? What's going on? The second phase is, may you search them? And the court in Terry held that a frisk, which is basically just a quick pat down of the outside of the body, the court did conclude that, yes, the Fourth Amendment was implicated because to stop someone is a seizure, to frisk someone is a search. But again, when it comes to a frisk as opposed to a more full-blown search, you still only need reasonably articulated suspicion. But in this case, that the person has a weapon on them that might endanger the police. You can't do a frisk in a stop-and-frisk situation searching for evidence. It has to be for a weapon.
Yeah. Well, we just heard the clip of Mayor Michael Bloomberg clearly unhappy about this ruling, saying that the judge is anti-police and not interested in reducing crime. He says that this stop question and frisk has reduced crime in New York. Do we know if this has been effective or ineffective against crime?
Well, there's debate about that, depending on who's doing the research and what kind of perspective they take. I think it probably, compared to New York to Chicago, New York has, as the mayor said, the lowest or among the lowest crime rates in the country, though there are a lot of other reasons for that. As the ACLU has pointed out, it's not simply because of stop-and-frisk tactics. Compare that to Chicago, where stop-and-frisk is less aggressive, and you have the highest murder rate just about in the country when it comes to young people, et cetera. So, I think a case can be made that it is effective in many respects, but it also can create great resentment in the community. And as the Judge Schindler pointed out in her opinion, All sorts of people get stopped. She argues that a high percentage of them, there really isn't reasonable suspicion. And it creates a lot of resentment, especially minority communities, which have been targeted for this because, for better or worse, minority communities have the highest crime rates. That's why New York City has focused on them. So on one hand, you do get a reduction in crime, but you also get much greater resentment in some of the minority communities if you go too far with it. So it really, in my view, it sort of boils down to trying to find the right balance.
Yeah.
And that's really what the judge was trying to get at, though some will argue she went too far in one direction. But everyone wants the right balance here.
Yeah, the judge ruled that stop and frisk is unconstitutional because it's violating the rights of minorities. But she didn't toss out the policy. She said that it must be monitored. What is she calling for?
Well, she's first of all, she's calling for another monitor. Apparently, New York already has some monitors, but this is one that would be more answerable to the federal court. And she picked someone who's got a long reputation in law and having been involved in criminal justice, a very distinguished individual, to monitor it, to report to the court progress. And monitoring would mean looking at how stop and frisk is being used, what kinds of policies are being adopted to reform what happens in New York, things like that. And also, she's having ordered that in each precinct that the area that has the office that has the highest percentage of stop and frisks, that the police officers wear a kind of camera on their uniforms so they can observe how they're behaving. So what you're talking about here is really pretty extensive judicial oversight of the practice in New York. And that's probably one reason that at least Mayor Bloomberg, if he's can do it before he leaves office, is going to appeal.
Yeah. Help us understand why the judge said this was violating the rights of minorities. Why wasn't this violating the rights of white criminals or people?
Right. Well, because the disproportionate impact has been on minority individuals, in particular Hispanic and black. And there was an extensive statistical analysis done by a professor at Columbia University named Jeffrey Fagan, who's an individual I happen to know, though for other reasons. And it showed that it's not enough to show that blacks and Hispanics are being stopped and frisked disproportionate to their general population, because if those groups are committing more crimes, then that would have to be factored into that. But according to the judge, you have to kind of look at it in a different way, and that is consider also the percentages of blacks and Hispanics who are not criminals. And she argued that when you control for all the relevant factors, even the factor that blacks and Hispanics do commit more crimes than whites, that there's still a disproportionate impact, and so therefore there's racial discrimination.
So that would mean that presumably police were saying, well, we have no idea if we think a crime is going to happen here. Let's just stop this car full of African-Americans and search them.
Well, they can't just do that, on an ad hoc basis, and the evidence wasn't even that New York was doing that. But she would argue that the police department has different criteria for when they can have reasonable suspicion. And, one is how they behave. Do they sort of fit the general description of the person that was identified as the criminal? And she argued that the New York criteria are just too loose, and they give the police too much discretion when it comes to this.
Let's take a related call. Dave in Madison is with us. Hello, Dave.
Morning. Now, I was listening to your news right before your guest came on, and basically the gentleman said over 200,000 blacks and Hispanics have been stopped and frisked. And I thought he said out of 5 million. I think he meant 1 million. But even if it was 1 million, that's 20%. And basically, considering the ratio of the population, I find that to be almost in the norm. And thanks for bringing up that rights of, the rights, racial discrimination rights. Last time I checked the Constitution, you either have rights or you don't. And it's for all people, majority and minority. And I find that hard to believe, because one time when I got lost in Chicago, greeny neighborhood back then, I got pulled over being white. I was lost, and I actually stopped the stop sign. The black officer pulled me over, and I said, what's going on? He goes, what are you doing here? And I'm like going, well, I'm lost. And he goes, I could see that because you stopped at the stop sign, and you shouldn't be here. And he gave me, and he helped me get out of Chicago as quickly as possible. But I found it rather nice that an officer would help me out, even though, quote unquote, I got pulled over for my own skin color. Thank you.
Well, wait a minute, Dave, though. Well, anyway, Dave left. He says that 200,000 stops of blacks and Hispanics does not seem disproportionate in New York.
Well, the figures are not entirely clear, but there were over 600,000 stops and frisks that were recorded last year in New York, and there has been an escalating number. Since they started counting in 2002, 2003, when the city council required that this be looked into, because this has been an ongoing political issue in New York for quite a while. And the number of stop and frisks up until this year had escalated each year. So it was over 600,000 last year, and so it had to be more than 200,000 for blacks and Hispanics.
We are talking with Donald Downs, professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison about the ruling from the federal judge yesterday that New York Police Department's stop and frisk policy is violating the rights of minorities. And she ordered reforms, including closer monitoring. We're talking about this ruling. We're talking about these reforms. We're talking about how effective or ineffective this policy is in reducing crime. And we're welcoming your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we're talking about stop and frisk and the ruling from a federal judge that New York's stop and frisk policy amounts to indirect racial profiling and violates the constitutional rights of minorities. We are talking with Donald Downs, a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison about this ruling, welcoming your questions and your reactions. Do you think that the federal judge got this right? Or do you think that the stop and frisk policy is good legal crime prevention? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You know, we have a comment from Felix on Facebook, and he says, you know, of course this is right. No warrant, no probable cause. That's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's that simple. But it's not that simple, Professor Downs.
No, I mean, the standard is that it has to just be reasonable cause, because it's not a full-blown search. It's not an arrest. So if you have someone in custody or an arrest, they're seized and they can't leave at all, that's when you need probable cause. Or if you're conducting a full-blown search. The court sort of compromised that if it's a brief stop to question the person, and then if the officer has reasonable belief that the person might be armed and therefore endanger the officer, then they may do a quick search on the outside, a frisk of the person for the weapon. So the constitutional standard is not probable cause when it comes to stop and frisk. It's always been reasonable cause, which is a lower threshold.
Yeah, and now Mayor Bloomberg says he's going to appeal. How do you see this playing out? Will stop and frisks stay in effect, or will we see major reforms to it?
Well, they're certainly going to stay into effect because it's absolutely necessary to do it. It's a matter of crime control. But like I said earlier, really the devil's in the details. So I think you have really, you know, two separate issues here. I mean, one is the sort of the politics of appeal. And, Mayor Bloomberg doesn't have that much longer to be in office. I don't recall, maybe you know, Joy,
when
he's leaving. But the mayor candidates that are out there now are pretty liberal on this issue. And it's not entirely sure whether they would appeal it, if indeed, you know, they have the power to make the appeal themselves or to revoke the appeal. So that's an open question. The other is really how this thing, if it is appealed, whether or not the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York or the U.S. Supreme Court would be somewhat, would overturn or reverse Judge Schindler's opinion. And there are some reasons given her reasoning, given some of the points she made, that it's possible that it would be reversed, you know, by a narrow margin. We don't know. It's also going to depend on how police react to it and whether or not they're able to make reasonable changes that also don't compromise crime control.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Will in Madison. Hello, Will.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to make this a little bit more personal and bring it home. For example, Professor Downs and I are both white men, over 50 years old. We don't experience things that African-American men experience on a daily basis, that is a term that you'll hear nowadays called microaggressions. And that is, on a daily basis, African-American men get racially profiled just walking down State Street or one of the main streets in Milwaukee, receiving, are being seen differently, are being looked at differently. I can't tell you how many times a colleague of mine who's African-American gets racially profiled on a daily basis, women pulling in purses when they're walking by, car doors being locked, or someone being asked, approached, questioned, why are you here? These are things I just don't experience. So on top of that, then, stop and frisk is being added to this. I think we need to think about this more broadly in the cultural context, what's happening to people of color, and then you add this on.
Mm-hmm. Professor Downs?
Well, it's certainly true that the and this was pointed out exhaustively in the decision, how broad it can be, and the judge, this was a 9-week trial before the judge. She took in a lot of evidence. And among other things, she looked at comments by the police and about how aggressive they are in pursuing this. And though the police comments themselves didn't involve overt or clear racism, the judge derived that there was an implicit basis for it there. And there's no question that that kind of either overt or covert racial profiling seems to be taking place in these contexts. But it's a delicate kind of line because of the disproportionate number of crimes being committed in these communities, and also minorities themselves are affected by this kind of crime. So if we end up going too far in the other direction, then we're going to expose more minority people to crimes. So really, I agree with your caller, you have to take into consideration what he said, and that is the real basis of the judge's opinion. But we want to try then to not do away with stop and frisk, but to get it right.
Yeah, so how do we get it right? What would need to be in place in order to alleviate the judge's concerns?
Yeah. Well, make sure that the judge pointed out in the decision that a consideration for constitutional rights was seldom taken into consideration in the New York City Police policies, in the way they trained their officers. This through a sort of a process of, step by step, the whole policy became, let's just go make sure we get at these guys. And there wasn't enough counterbalance in the policy and in the training to make sure that they were also abiding by constitutional rights. So that it wasn't the constitutional right consciousness, which is what the caller referred to, wasn't part of the training enough. So that's the first step you would take. Add that to the training and have people, overviewing or overseeing the training to make sure that the constitutional rights are taken into consideration at the same time we're concerned about crime.
Let's take a call from Eric in Hartford next. Hello, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be brief here. I just wanted to get your guest's opinion on what he feels would have happened with this case, say, if it was in Atlanta and not New York. I have a feeling that the DOJ, the ACLU, would have came hammering down on the city. Reverend Jackson would have been scheduling marches and everything else. And that's my comment.
What? All right. Well, what do you say?
Well, I think that people like Reverend Jackson have already made their voices known, whether it be New York or anywhere else. I'm not sure how Atlanta would be different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have made this a political issue right from the get-go. And now the question is, what about Atlanta police tactics? What about the courts down there? Would they be any different? That's another question. I'm not sure I can answer that.
Well, and again, the policy in New York is considered the most aggressive one in the country. Well, other cities have these policies?
It's one of them. Yeah, I mean, every city has stop and frisk policy. I mean, it's a standard police operation, a standard police policy. And the question is how much it's balanced with the concern with constitutional rights and how aggressively it's applied. And New York has been applied pretty aggressively. That's the main thing.
Yeah, so in our final minute, I know I asked you kind of how you saw this playing out, but it's possible that that Mayor Bloomberg will be gone before before this finishes up?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really know the timing on that. I have to look into that more. I know he wants to appeal. And the thing is that the case could be in process, and the court, the city could back out of the appeal if someone else is mayor. And right now, the other mayoral candidates tend to be more on the judge's side on this case. Yeah, but, so it's not entirely clear that it would be appealed.
Yeah, so you do see stop and frisk being maintained in some fashion.
Yes.
But with the racial profiling concerns more readily in place.
Right, and who knows, you know, supposing we go too far in the other direction and then crime comes back, we're going to be having the same conversation 10, 15 years from now from a different point of view, maybe.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us. Donald Downs is a professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Justin Williams for producing this hour, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including a special edition of On Your Money. We'll have a financial expert who is with AARP. And an expert on credit card debt coming up during On Your Money after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.